We tend to think of the rags-to-riches story as an American ideal, but Yuni Hong has been a witness to the way South Korea has made that transition in just a few decades. And in her book, The Birth of Korean Cool, How One Nation is Conquering the World Through Pop Culture, she discusses South Korea's leap from a developing country to a global leader in business, technology, education, and pop culture. Ms. Hong is a journalist who has been featured in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and other publications. Her book is published by Picador. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show.
Hello.
How do you define Korean cool? And I always thought that cool was about not having to try. So is South Korea not trying?
This is actually probably the first instance in the history of the world of a country trying to manufacture cool. Literally no one else has ever tried. The United States, the two countries that I would call cool are both English-speaking countries. In the United States, it was because they were the military heroes of World War II, and they literally gave $13 billion to Europe for rebuilding it. So they were basically the saviors of the world, and anything that they did, anything that they made, was automatically desirable. The second cool country was the UK with their British invasion of the 60s, and that actually really just happened by accident. They were the first country to produce rock bands that were self-made. Korean cool is a completely different model.
It's a national policy.
It's a national policy. It's a stated objective of the current presidential administration and every president since the late 1990s.
And do they see it as having an economic advantage or a political advantage?
Well, the point of building cool is the end game, which is to make people buy Korean because they associate it with coolness. So, for example, if people become addicted to Korean dramas, then they will become interested in Korean cosmetics and Samsung phones and the types of foods that are seen on these dramas. And this has actually already started to happen.
Well, has Korea focused on pop culture as a path to international success when we already have Samsung, Daewoo, Kia, Hyundai?
Well, that's a really good question, actually, and it seems obvious that if they're doing well with semiconductors and cars, that they should seemingly stick with that. But they decided after the Asian financial crisis of 1997 that their country was too dependent economically on companies like Hyundai and Samsung, and if those companies fell, the nation would fall also. So
they were watching the Japanese story. Japan had been seriously hurt despite the fact that it was a world leader in technology and automotives and other industries.
Yeah, that's spot on. And Korea knew that they had to expand into a new area, and they picked information technology and pop culture.
Who are they trying to sell their cool to? Because in this country, it's pretty much Gangnam and then automobiles and television sets and cell phones.
Well, the dirty secret about the Korean pop culture world invasion is that they almost don't care about the U.S. And this is a little scary as Americans, but we're getting to a point in the world status where you don't really need the U.S. as a market anymore to be really successful.
Does the fact that South Korea has been a third world country for much of its history play a role here? They can go to other third world countries and say, look at what we're doing now?
Well, that's exactly right. And that's why a lot of countries are cheering Korea on, because they see South Korea as sort of the underprivileged person who became the basketball star, made the NBA kind of thing. And that's exactly right. And also, Korea knows what it's like for a country to develop, and they know exactly at what juncture people will start to become rich enough to buy Samsung phones.
You've called your book The Birth of Korean Cool, not South Korean Cool. Has Korean simply come to mean South Korea?
Yes, basically the way that America doesn't mean North America, but rather the United States. I guess it's a bias
right.
on my part.
In Mexico, people would tell me, we're Americans too.
Right, right. No, it's sort of similar. Yeah, kind of a cultural bias on my part. Maybe not very PC.
Well, what about North Korea? You mentioned that you feel brainwashed against North Korea.
Yeah, that's something that will never go away, is that I feel genuine terror when I hear about North Korea, because we were so isolated, not as isolated as they were, but we were protected from news about North Korea. There was heavy censorship of foreign news. We were not even allowed to see photographs of the North Korean leaders. I had no idea what any of these people looked like.
This is when South Korea was led by authoritarian rulers.
That's right. They were
Has it democratized a lot more? Is this pop culture thing part of the democratization?
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, people forget that Korea has only been a true democracy since 1987. Until then, it was basically a military dictatorship.
What about the North? Although it's a very close society, does South Korean pop culture find its way up there? Do we know?
Yes, it's actually sort of the basis of their black market industry. People literally risk their lives to smuggle in bootleg Korean dramas and there is a recent story about these Korean desserts called choco pies becoming illegal currency like cigarettes in prisons.
So you've mentioned soap operas and other TV dramas. Do they get subtitles and wind up being sent to Japan, to China, to other parts of Asia?
Yes.
Are you big in Cambodia?
Oh, they're particular? I suspect they would be. Korea, actually, the government subsidizes the translations. And it's basically a cooperation between the Korean broadcasters and the government.
Now, Gangnam has become popular in this country, and there is a hilarious video that you might find on the internet called NASA Johnson Style. It's about the NASA program, and it's done Gangnam Style. It's really quite catchy and terrific, but that's an example of this what you're talking about, because Americans see it and immediately understand what it's all about.
Yes, I mean, and I'm just as surprised as anyone else, and I'm sure Psy is too, that this has become sort of one of the most enduring memes in the history of the internet.
So some countries are prolific at creating different kinds of cultural products. Now, Sweden seems to produce a disproportionately large number of internationally successful pop music producers. Is South Korea looking to a country like Sweden?
Yes. In fact, it's funny you mention that, because most of the Korean songwriters are from Sweden, the difference being that Sweden produces these singular products, whereas Korea packages them, pulling them from different countries and repackaging.
Do you think that, of course, most of the Swedish pop music is quite different than Gangnam Style? Do you think the fact that Gangnam Style seems to be ironic and almost rebellious, is that part of its appeal?
Yes, which is why it was surprising even to Koreans. It was the sort of first song that was not in the K-pop mold. He was a self-styled sort of rebel, and for some reason that's the thing that resonated.
My guest is Yuni Hong. Her book, The Birth of Korean Cool, How One Nation is Conquering the World Through Pop Culture. Your parents moved your family back to South Korea in 1985 when it was still going through a transition. What inspired the move? Did they see this as the place to be?
Well, my father's an economist, and during that period in Korean history, the Korean government was trying to reverse a brain drain. All of their educated people had gone to the U.S., like both of my parents, for study, and they stayed in the U.S. So Korea created incentives for people like my parents to come back.
And you were 12 years old. Was there culture shock?
Oh, it was unbelievable. I didn't speak the language, and I moved from a very, very wealthy country to a place where literally one-third of the homes had no indoor plumbing at the time.
But that's all changed?
It's unbelievable how much it's changed. I think that Seoul now looks like the capital city in the movie The Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. And everything is automatic, doors open and shut sort of by magic, and Wi-Fi is as common as the air you breathe.
For many years, as you mentioned, the United States influenced the rest of the world. In fact, people even complained about American hegemony. Are we seeing Korean influences now in this country?
Well, as I said, I think most people, if they're being honest, would say that it will never replace American pop culture, but it will. You can still be a close second and still capture a huge part of the market. What we're seeing is, I think what's going to happen here is primarily food.
Really?
Yes.
Well, Americans love barbecue.
They love barbecue. It's just going to be right up there with KC barbecue and Texas barbecue, and then there's Korean barbecue.
KFC, Korean barbecue.
Exactly, Korean fried chicken.
How did Samsung go from being what was called Samsung to just being a supplier to Apple for parts of the iPhone to being the largest seller of smartphones now?
Well, the short story, this is going to sound dramatic, is that they've locked up their executives until they agreed that they would all either quit or take pay cuts until they turned the company around. Their chairman was completely insane, and he set 100,000 phones on fire because they were defective. So after that, you're not going to make that mistake again.
Did it help that South Korea had to catch up? So when it finally put together Wi-Fi system, it actually came up with something better than we have in this country?
Yes, that's exactly right. The World Wide Web was a great equalizer. No one country around the 90s had a leg up. So if you were going to start, you could get ahead really easily.
On the other hand, whenever I read an article about internet addiction, it's almost always about South Korea or China. Do you think it's a real problem?
It is a real problem, and I think it's a symptom of psychological unhealthiness on the part of the whole country. Success definitely comes at a price.
Now, what do you mean by that?
I just mean that the people are very accustomed to the notion of self-sacrifice for the greater good. But it goes hand in hand with the idea of shame. And actually, Amy Schwa goes into this in the triple package. Part of the success profile is a sense of superiority coupled with a sense of inferiority. And the shame that drives you to succeed will also drive you to basically not want to live if you fail. So,
how much of this grows out of the relationship between South Korea and Japan? Because South Korea, for such a long time, was really the cheap source of labor for Japan.
No, absolutely. It was this sort of jealous younger brother, the Jacob Esau kind of relationship. And Korea always set its sights on beating Japan. And that was a big motivator in their success.
You describe some innovative experiments to change how people are educated. Did you see that while you were going to school in Korea?
Yes. When I left the United States, I was 12 and my bedtime fixed was 8 p.m. That completely went out the window when we went to Korea, and I would have to study till 2 a.m. And we were getting thrashed all the time, which is not something that one expects.
The word Han came up several times during your research for the book. What is it and where does it come from?
The word Han refers to a genetically or culturally specific form of anger that by definition only Korean people can have. And it's an anger of the generations that gets passed on forever and ever and simply accumulates. And you're just born angry. It's like original sin, but instead of sin, it's original anger.
Were you born with Han? Because you say you've had a hard time passing for Korean.
I think I was born with some Han. Maybe not enough. You're probably right.
What do you think the United States can learn from South Korea?
I think that they can learn the importance of studying foreign markets that they're trying to enter rather than assuming, which is not always going to be the case, that the world will automatically buy American. That's not going to be the case, I think, in the 21st century.
So is American pop music less popular in Korea right now or in Asia in general than it was 10 years ago?
Yes, absolutely. And as I say, America may always be number one, but what's different is that there is definitely room for a number two to really, really, really do well.
As somebody who has lived in both countries, do you feel conflicted about all of that? South Korea. Yay, United States.
I don't really think about it unless it's the World Cup or something.
Yuni Hong will be speaking and signing books at the Upper East Side Barnes & Noble store tonight at 7 p.m. That's at 86th Street and Lexington Avenue. And for more information about that and any other event that involves people who are on our show, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. Yuni Hong's book is called The Birth of Korean Cool, How One Nation is Conquering the World Through Pop Culture. It is published by Picador. And, Yuni, it's been a lot of fun having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Thank you.